Don't pull over, just turn the volume up. It's time for Roll Call with Chief Brian Dugan. We're calling out those who are bridging the gap to improve the lives and safety of others. Here now is your host, campus top cop, Brian Dugan.
And I have no doubt that the next mayor will inherit a very, very well-run, cohesive group of men and women that like working with each other.
Yeah,
we don't do drama.
No, there's no doubt, and it's just really amazing how well everybody works together. So, Mayor, we have our first caller on the.
It's my mother
on our premiere show for Roll Call with Chief Brian Dugan, and we have our guest. We have our guest, Mayor Bob Buckhorn, and we have Brian on the line. Brian, are you there?
I am here. Hey, Chief.
Hey, how are you,
Mr. Mayor? I'm
hey,
good.
Brian, hey,
Mr. Mayor. It's awesome to talk to you guys this morning. I just wanted to, I saw you this morning at Carla Lewis's dedication, and I just, I thought it was an awesome opportunity to have a public forum to personally thank you for everything that you have done for this city and for the citizens of this city, and just, to let you know this morning, it all circled back for me listening to your, to how you spoke about Carla. Your passion and your dedication and your love for this city comes out in just about every single word you say.
So today we're here with Titus O'Neil from WWE. If you follow him on Twitter or Instagram, it's at Titus O'Neil WWE. We're going to be taking some calls shortly. If anyone's interested, our phone number is 347-989-0030. An interesting story is how me and you met. It was back a few years ago. It was on Halloween.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you remember.
Yeah,
we met with Sheriff Chad Cronister.
Yep.
to discuss your Joy of Giving event.
Yep.
And we'll kind of get into that.
Yep.
I was kind of at lunch telling you my story. I was the interim chief at that time, and we had a serial killer in Seminole Heights.
Correct.
And I was telling you about how we were going to do Halloween that night with the kids, and I had JT Brown,
mm-hmm.
who had protested raising his fist during the national anthem at a Tampa Bay Lightning game. And one of the interesting things that that I'm very impressed with you about, you talked about it earlier, you never really take a side.
Mm-hmm.
You're very good at getting everybody in the room and have them talk.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a gift that you have that kind of probably goes unnoticed. I think there's a lot of things that you do that go unnoticed. We were at lunch, and I was telling you about how JT was going to meet me out there on Halloween. And you said, yeah, I'm going too.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, you are? And he goes, yeah, I already reached out to the mayor, to Bob Buckhorn, and I'm going to be out there. And I'm like, okay, that's pretty cool. And I remember you had reached out to JT when he first did his form of protest and asked him, okay, that's cool, but what's the next step?
Right.
And that's what I said. I think it's very impressive that you're always kind of trying to push people to not necessarily take a side, but do things better and make this a better world. That night you brought Chris Archer, who with the Rays, but now he's with the Pittsburgh Pirates having some success. Why did you think it was important for you to be out there that night?
Well, the people in Carrollwood, the kids and families in Carrollwood, the kids and families in South Tampa, Riverview, et cetera, everywhere outside of the Seminole Heights area, that they were not dealing with the stress or the fears that everybody else was dealing with. And I felt like it was a great opportunity, to even show more that it's okay. Like a lot of times, people will call the police in times of tragedy, and they'll call the police when in uncomfortable times. But then it's like, will you do something in the community with the police officers? Because that's just as important to me, the relationship. So that it's kind of like, the dad, your father too. So if my kids only came to me when they needed something, at some point they'll get wearing on me. But, if my kids or what my kids do value a relationship with me, it doesn't matter what they ask me for, what they don't ask me for. It's just a give and take kind of relationship, and then that makes everybody stronger together. And so I wanted these kids and families to see, you know, hey, here's a guy that, you know, is on television. Here's an athlete that has a professional career for his livelihood out here with police officers and law enforcement agencies that are trying to make sure that everything's going to be okay.
Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to Roll Call with the Chief. This is Brian Dugan, your Chief of Police for the City of Tampa. And today I'm here with ESPN commentator Tiffany Green. If you follow her on Twitter, it's at Tiffany A. Green, huh? What's the A stand for?
Ooh, now we're getting really personal.
All right, well, then we're not going to share it.
My middle name was Antoinette.
Oh, very good, very good. Now it makes sense. So it's at Tiffany A. Green. You know, you have quite the story. You know, I was very fortunate since I became chief of police, got to know you. You've helped with a couple things, and I certainly appreciate that. So will you tell us a little bit about yourself and where you came from and how you got to where you are today?
Yeah, born and raised right here in Tampa, Florida, and I don't think I've ever come across a chief of police to have an intro like that with a nice little bed of music underneath the top cop. Like, shout out to you for doing this show. But born and raised right here in Tampa, a product of Hillsborough County Public Schools, graduated from Hillsborough High School's International Baccalaureate Program, went on to Florida A&M University, where I graduated from the School of Journalism and Graphic Communication with a broadcast journalism degree. And you and I were talking before we came on the show, like, this is something that I've always wanted to do. I've always wanted to be a sportscaster. I wrote it down when I was 5 years old in a yearbook and said, this is what I'm going to do. And I think sometimes when people say that, or when people ask you as an icebreaker question, what do you want to be when you grow up? You know, we throw out a number of different topics or professions, lawyer or police officer, firefighter, artist. And I don't know if people necessarily believe that you're going to follow through with what you say you want to do, but I was very blessed to be able to do so.
You brought up several organizations that I quite frankly never heard of, which is part of what I want to do with this podcast, mm-hmm. to start talking about the things that are already going on in our community, mm-hmm. as opposed to, you know, trying to reinvent the wheel and start new organizations. We have so many organizations that are out there that can always use help. Mm-hmm. One of the things you brought up, the Selman Institute, what is that? I never heard of that before.
Okay, so
I thought I was pretty tuned in as to what's going on.
So Leroy Selman, the former Buccaneer, who was the first AD at the University of South Florida, they created this mentoring institute because obviously he had a heart for education and helping young people. And so they take student athletes and they link them up with members of the community that match, you know, their interest and what they think they may want to do. And so you meet with them throughout the semester and you can continue that relationship on, which I chose to, and constantly be there. So it's not just like, oh yes, I'm signing up for this program to be a mentor. Like, once you connect to someone, I think that you should remain connected to them or until that season is done in both of you all's lives. So the Selman Mentoring Institute has been fantastic because as a student athlete in college, Chief, you may not know this, but I was an NCAA bowler.
Is that right?
Yeah. I got a scholarship for bowling.
That is impressive.
Yeah.
Hello, everyone, today. We are going to chat with Christine Rover. She is here to discuss the Center for Autism-Related Disabilities and working to keep our children and families safe. Christine, can you tell us a little bit about the CARD and your role there?
Sure. Thank you for having us this afternoon. I'm the Coordinator of Community Engagement at the Center for Autism and Related Disabilities at the University of South Florida. We're also known as CARD. We were the first of seven regional centers created in Florida by the legislature 26 years ago. So we're sort of the best kept secret in Florida. And it's a service to families, as you mentioned, service providers, teachers, businesses, and it's at no cost.
Really? I didn't realize it was at no cost. I didn't know it had been around that long.
Yes. So we can provide direct assistance to families. And we are out in the community, so we go to them. They don't come to our offices at USF. And we can also work with teachers in classrooms and businesses. And then we do a lot of resource and referral out of our offices also.
That's really interesting. You know, the one thing about autism, you know, I think it's one of those things that we don't really know how to describe it, so to speak, but we know what it is.
Well, hello, everyone. Today on Roll Call with the Chief, we're going to talk to Lieutenant Doug Groves about the 2019 Police Unity Tour. And tell us a little bit about the Police Unity Tour and the significance of that event. You know, Doug, how long have you been with the police department?
I've been with the department a little over 24 years.
Is that right? So you're now officially one of the old guys like
yes,
me.
Yes.
Yeah. So I'm sure you probably had a lot more hair when you started, and it probably wasn't gray, you know.
And a little thinner, too.
Well, same boat, same boat. But that's all right. You know, time is, you know, an interesting event. It's a physical challenge. It's an emotional challenge. There's a lot of emotions tied to that. And, you know, there's a lot of things that go into that. So this year, we have 8 officers that are participating. That includes 3 of our retired officers, and we have 2 of our motor units. So if you could, let's just kind of give our listeners a little insight of, you know, maybe a virtual ride, so to speak, on the cities and the different things that the cities that we visit that we go through on the actual tour, and what to expect when you come across during the tour this year.
Yeah, we start our tour in Portsmouth, Virginia. So we meet there as a chapter. We spend a day there. We go through safety briefings, and the support groups get organized. And then we start off the morning of the 10th, because the ride's always conducted the 10th, 11th, and 12th, because the candlelight vigil is always held on May 13th. So the morning of the 10th, we will ride out of Portsmouth, and that's one of our days where it's a little bit more scenic, and you're less tired than you're going to be later, you know, over the next couple of days. The first day is actually our longest day of riding. It's about 115 miles. And like I said, we begin in Portsmouth, and then our first lunch day is going to be held in Yorktown, which is a very beautiful area to ride through. That's actually where General Cornwallis surrendered to General Washington, and you actually ride right by the field that's marked, the field that where the British surrendered. So it's really neat there. We have a lunch at a park that's on the side of York River. And then one of the few hills of that day is actually the bridge that crosses the York River, because it spans pretty high because there's a naval base there, so the big ships have to be able to get underneath it. But after we break for lunch, one of the neatest experiences that I've had on the tour was back in 2016, we made a stop after lunch that day in Page Middle School, which is in Gloucester, Virginia, and they had 650 students, and all of the faculty were all there. It was a surprise. Nobody knew that we were doing it other than the executive board members. So we rode into there, and all the students and all the faculty were out there cheering and yelling, and each of the students had actually chosen a fallen officer from the previous year and researched those officers and made a placard with, like, their information and their picture on it. And in our group, our chapter, we have approximately 30 survivors, which are husbands and wives and children of and mothers and fathers of officers that have been killed in the line of duty. And the placards that students had made for those officers were presented to the families. So that was one of the, like I said, very emotional, you know, very touching moment. And like I said, one of the greatest experiences I've had with the Unity Tour. Then we continue on for that day to Tappahannock is where we end our day there. And like I said, that's one of our longest day, about 115 miles, but it's also one of our flattest days. It's got some hills and climbing to it.
Hello, everyone. For today in Roll Call with Chief, we're going to talk with Daryl Daniels about his role in helping law enforcement bridge the gap with our teens out there in our society. Daryl currently serves as the Executive Director of Youth Programs for Derrick Brooks Charities. Daryl, can you tell us a little bit about the organization and what the goals are of Derrick Brooks Charities?
First of all, Chief, thank you for having us here. Derrick Brooks Charities was founded by former Tampa Bay Buccaneer, of course, number 55, Derrick Brooks, back some 19 years ago, to help young people have experiences they would not otherwise have inside of the walls of where they live. We believe in empowering young people through education, through outreach and other initiatives to help them succeed and to become better.
And so I show up in jeans and a hoodie,
mm-hmm.
and it was just by accident because of the weather. And
right.
the kids just were taken back that the chief of police dressed like anybody else. It was just kind of interesting to me. It gave me a completely different perspective on how kids view law enforcement and things like that.
So and imagine when you showed up and you had a real conversation with them. You talk about, I won't say who can't boil water, but they remember that comment. So they remember the openness and the transparency, and they said, wow, we never knew that he could be, we would never known he was the police chief.
It's amazing how we took a situation where there was supposed to be a softball game interacting with kids, but because of the weather, they couldn't play. And then we just turned it into a question and answer thing.
Right.
And it just really, I think if you recall, I learned what a bando was. You remember what a bando
was?
That's right.
I learned that 5 years ago when they said it. Mr. G, it's a bando. I said, what's a bando? It's an abandoned house, and they have theme rooms for whatever naughty behavior. You know, don't go in this room if you don't want to do that. You don't go in this room. So the bando are the abandoned houses, and that's why you have to talk to young people so that you can know what's going on.
Welcome. Today in Roll Call with the Chief, we're going to chat with Julius Tobin about his role in providing free bikes to at-risk kids in the community through a nonprofit called On Bikes. Julius co-founded On Bikes with a group of friends back in 2011 after hosting a community bike ride. I'm sure there's a good story behind the community bike ride. So, Julius, welcome, and tell us about the impact of community biking and everything that you guys have going on.
Hey, thank you so much for having me. We were founded in 2011. There were a group of guys, and we got together, and we just went out on a fun bike ride. And at the end of that, we kind of got together and were like, man, none of us had been on bikes in a really long time. We had such a great time, and it kind of unleashed the inner kid in us a little bit. And we got together, and we thought about, man, what else could we do with this? So we put together an event. It was called the Tour de Tampa. In the middle of the summer, the Gonsmarts were nice enough to lend us a parking lot in Ybor City, and we honestly didn't know what to expect or who would show up. And the community came out. We had about 150 people show up, and we went restaurant to restaurant, and that was really the start of everything. We saw that there was a need in the community, and it was so awesome, that initial ride, how many people came out to, places to donate there. Obviously, we love our volunteers. For the bike build, which will be in December, you got to sign up quickly for that. But we're looking for new opportunities to engage volunteers. That's something we've struggled with a little bit because it's, what we do, it doesn't lend itself to big crowds and lots of volunteers right now, but we're working on some really cool things that we can get more volunteers involved. Obviously, you can come to the events, the Winter Wonder Ride, which will be the second Saturday in December. We'll be releasing that theme and crazy suit pattern soon.
Good.
Are an employee or have a company who might want to host a bike build, we've started doing corporate bike builds really all over the country. We'll be in New York and New Jersey next week. We'll be in California with Adobe. We're working with Publix and Intel and United Healthcare and ESPN. So we've been really fortunate to be able to start creating impact outside of Tampa as well. And
hello, everyone. Today we are at Roll Call with the Chief, and we are going to talk to Holly Guastalli. Wow, say that quick. Say that five times. Holly Guastalli, latent fingerprint specialist, and we have Monique Polisi here. I think who's also a latent fingerprint specialist. I think we'll just stick with Holly and Monique as the easiest thing to do. What do you guys think? I've struggled sometimes. So, how long you've been here with the Tampa Police Department as latent fingerprint specialist, but you've done more than just that. So, Holly, how long have you been here?
I've been with TPD for 2 years now.
Okay. And what did you originally start out as?
Actually, back home in Massachusetts, I started in the court system as a criminal and civil clerk.
Okay.
And then when I came down here, I worked at the Florida Department of Law Enforcement for approximately 3 years in the latent print discipline, and then came to TPD 2 years ago.
Okay, and you started here right as a latent fingerprint specialist?
Yes.
Okay, that's pretty cool. And Monique, what about you? How long you been here? How did you start out and get into all the business?
I started out as a crime scene technician here, and I did that for 8 years. And I had a short stint as a latent print examiner in Pasco, and then came back home to TPD to do the latent fingerprint specialist role.
Oh, that is pretty cool. Yeah, now that you mentioned it, I do remember that you left and went to the other side and then finally saw the light and came back home to the Tampa Police Department. So that's good. So, you know, your roles here as a latent fingerprint specialist, you know, kind of tell me what that's all about for someone who's listening and, you know, really just kind of wonders, because, you know, you see so many different TV shows and, you know, what's real in life, what's, you know, what's not. But, yeah, you know, one of the things I never, and I was at a murder trial a few years back, and someone, it was Susan DeLodge, actually sat down and testified and explained the loops and the swirls and all that stuff and the indication. It's very, very intriguing. So
swirls.
What's that?
Sorry, Chief.
Swirls,
no,
whirls,
no.
Sorry, you know?
We do like ice cream swirls.
Okay. All right. Well, you're sweating me now, okay. And that's why we have you here. That's why I wasn't up testifying. So explain what I was talking about. Correct me and explain kind of what the whole thing is about.
Well, there are three pattern types of fingerprints.
Hello, everyone. It's Brian Dugan, your chief of police. Today, I have Robert Blunt with me. And, you know, throughout the month of June, we're going to be featuring our 2018 Community Investment Grant recipients on the show. This is a grant-funded program that's done through our Seized Drug Money, which is the Law Enforcement Trust Fund. And just the philosophy behind it is we take some bad money from some drug dealers and things and criminal enterprises, and we put that bad money to good use in our community. It's, you know, it's exciting for us to be able to offer these grants again this year to nonprofit organizations that are helping our Tampa residents. Today in roll call, we have Robert Blunt. Robert serves as the director of Ready for Work Hillsborough program, and how the community investment grant has helped his organization. You know, it's really exciting for us to be able to do this. You know, last year we awarded $5,000 in the investment grant to the Ready for Work program to help ex-offenders re-enter the workforce. Good afternoon, Robert. Can you tell us a little bit about the mission of the Ready for Work program and how it started here in Tampa?
Absolutely, Chief Dugan. First of all, thank you for having me on today. And certainly thank you for investing in this great work. The Ready for Work Hillsborough program is actually a replication of a nationally acclaimed Ready for Work program that started up in Jacksonville by Operation New Hope. And we were the first replication here in Hillsborough County. And thanks to some seed money from the county, we were able to get that program up and going in September of 2014. So we're not quite 5 years into it. But it is a very comprehensive reentry program that addresses everything from substance abuse, mental health, housing, transportation, to career development with life management.
Roll Call with Chief Brian Dugan is directed and produced by Janelle McGregor, with technical assistance provided by Eddie Durkin, Steve Haggerty, and Derek Lang. Keep the conversation going on social media, following @TampaPD on Facebook and Twitter, and use the hashtag Roll Call.